thatgreatbusinessshow.com is brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Welcome to That Great Business Show, episode 37 of Ireland's best business podcast, brought to you, as always, by the world's best shaving oil company, DeFactoShave.com. I'm Conal O'Moran. We have an even more positive Great Business Show this episode, as we hear that the rag trade says we're going to enjoy the roaring 20s again, post-lockdown, of course. We have lots and lots of positive news about the travel trade, and we may even hear of some of those lovely hacks or tips that Team GBS so love. And I'm really, really looking forward to sticking the boot into Bitcoin. And don't worry, if you haven't got a breeze about it, because we're going to go from A to Z about Bitcoin and all the other dodgy cryptocurrencies that are flavor of the day in investment circles. We're here to expose the emperor's new clothes. And of course, there will be no jargon, just good information. Remember, if you want to join Team GBS, the door is always wide open. Tell us about your great business on LinkedIn. Our numbers have gone up again since last week. And if SMEs are your target, why not advertise with us? We are open for business just like you. And our weekly ask is that you mind our planet. It's official. You are not allowed to put shaving foam cans into the green bin. So they're all sent to landfill. Switching from shaving foam to DeFacto, the world's best shaving oil, is beyond simple. Good for you, good for your pocket, and good for the planet. DeFactoShave.com.
That Great Business Show.
Do not skip this piece just because it's about Bitcoin. Because you'd have to love the person who wrote this in a recent investment note. He said, "Let me be clear from the outset that there is a very good reason why the topic of Bitcoin, or any cryptocurrency for that matter, has, to this point, never been discussed, commented on, or featured in any way in this column. And that is because, if I'm being totally honest, I really don't have a clue what exactly it is. And when it comes to investing, as Peter Lynch of Fidelity Investments famously said, you need to know what you own and know why you own it. That's not to say I know nothing about blockchain technology." This is the same person writing, which I think will be hugely beneficial in many areas. "But buying into any cryptocurrency when you don't really know what it is or feels more like an analysis of the 210 race at Chepstow using the color of the jockey's silks. But given the price movements in cryptocurrency, particularly in the past few weeks, it seems incumbent on me to break my silence." So wrote my old buddy and a regular on my previous radio show, Aidan Donnelly, head of equities at Davy. He's got a big job. "Similarly, I have never written or commented about Bitcoin because I think it's a whole heap of hooey. So we are both joyfully going to give it both barrels." Aidan Donnelly, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Well, we're either both right or both wrong. Time will tell, but let's have a chat anyway.
Between us, I think we have about 100 years in the investment business, so we might
split two-thirds, one-third in your favour. That's all I want to say.
Bitcoin, from the very, very basics, what is it?
Well, let's take a step back, okay? Let's take a step a little bit back and think about what I said in the piece about blockchain technology, because unfortunately, as far as I see it, people tend to confuse the two things all the time. And automatically, when they're talking about blockchain, they say, and Bitcoin or crypto or Ethereum or all of these other things. So at its very simplest, blockchain is a digital ledger, like we used to do in accounting when you had your big ledgers. And it's a digital ledger that is basically cast in stone. So nobody can ever change it. It can be updated, but it automatically keeps a log of everything that has happened all the way along in a process. So why is that of use?
Well, hang on a second now. Can it be hacked?
Very difficult.
But
not impossible. It's not impossible.
So therefore, that's one small dent.
Yeah, one small dent. I would say to you, but if you think about its uses outside of Bitcoin and all that. Where would it be useful, right? So you want to have a digital ledger that is that it cannot be amended and for the most part is just constantly updated and things like that and is always a an exact record of what has happened. So think about areas like food safety where you want to be able to track a piece of food from the farm to the fork. Think about if you are building a jet airline and you want to basically have a complete record of every single nut and bolt that went into that plane, you have it and it can't be changed. And then therefore everybody knows. So there's lots of things when you think about it that this
the
technology...
property register is where I like it. Forever and a day, we will have our property registered and there will be no changing. Your health records will also be on blockchain.
Yeah. I think they will eventually, but I think that's going to be a harder one to do. But another area that I have actually seen it being applied to is there is a private company out there called AidTech, and they use blockchain technology as part of a thing called... tracking your donations to charity. And you know the whole question of you put 100 euro into the box, where does it go? Well, they're able to actually track that all the way down to the very last point where, you know, Connell over in the States after a hurricane gets $25 to go and buy whatever he needs for his house. And that's Trace Donate, I think, is the term. So there's lots of that technology out there that you can see the applications for. So that's where I see there's lots of great things going on.
But that is not Bitcoin.
No, that is not Bitcoin. Bitcoin uses that technology and has created, along with all of the other things, what many of the cult fans of Bitcoin and these other cryptocurrencies define as the new digital money. All right. And if you ever hear about it and they'll say, oh, you know, it's new digital money and this is what it's going to be and digital money is going to take over the world and blah, 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 blah. And I go, right. So let's think about what is it about money that they don't like that they want to replace, right? And well, the obvious thing is, you know, it needs to be inflation protection. Yes, you could look at that. It needs to be transferable without friction. And it needs to also, the biggest thing now, if you think about it, is that it's insulated from government manipulation or basically just the printing presses, all right? Now, at this stage, I would say the jury hasn't even been sequestered yet to come to the conclusion about whether you can decide one way or the other on this. You know, is it easily transferable and seamless? No, it's not. It's actually quite expensive to go through the various exchanges that you want to do.
Like how much?
I don't know. I actually haven't bothered because, again,
I think we might be up at 8% or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, 8 or 9%. That could well be it.
Which is probably a chunk of change. Yeah.
Well, given the fact we used to complain we had to pay 5% to banks for our foreign exchange when we used to go on holidays, right? Right, 8% looks very, very difficult. The other thing you've got to think about is what is the benefit of money? Money is that it's universally accepted across everywhere that you want to do, right? So is Bitcoin? No, it's not, right? So why wouldn't it be? Well, think about it from this way. If I'm running a business, okay, and I'm pricing my produce in Bitcoin, and we see the volatility that we have seen in the last 3 weeks, not only could my profit margin be gone in the space of a half a day, my whole company could be gone because I've completely priced something the wrong way, right? And that's where, as I see it, one of the biggest problems with thinking of this as money is it's way too volatile to be money, right? As a proper medium of exchange.
But the big one for me, though, is who determines, one, how many bitcoins there are, and therefore, what is the value of a bitcoin? Well, yes, we see 35,000 up, 35,000 down, 35,000 anywhere you want.
Yeah, and it is purely a you know, I think if we were back 2 centuries ago, we might be talking about tulips in Amsterdam. That is my sense of it. And again, look, you know, there's lots of people making lots of money, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a sensible investment. That just means you're finding a greater fool to buy it off you at a higher price.
Now, that is so important because it is that famous thing, a zero-sum game. Yeah. Somebody makes 100,000, somebody had to lose 100,000.
Yeah.
was actually talking to somebody who bought a brand new BMW on the back of Bitcoin recently. So,
And look, don't get me wrong, there are plenty of people that have done that and have made lots and lots of money. But in the same way that everybody talks about how much money they've made, there's also been people who bought it at $40,000 to the dollar or $40,000 and are now looking at $35 or $30,000 or $35,000 or $30,000 and are nursing a very, very big headache as a result of that. The other thing that makes me wonder about this, and when we talk about one of the big criticisms that have come out recently, is this whole idea that it takes so much electricity to manufacture one of these. So it takes 20,000, I think I read something, it takes 20,000 euros worth of electricity to produce 8,000 euros worth of Bitcoin. Now, I would be smart enough to know most companies, and if it costs you €20,000 to make something and you can sell it for 8,000, you ain't going to be in business too long, right? You know, like even if you got a government subsidy, you still won't be in business for very, very long, you know?
Have you ever worked out where a Bitcoin actually comes from, what it looks like, what it feels like, what... You know.
Well, what always amazes me is about it, when you ever see the symbols for Bitcoin, it always looks like a gold coin, right? And you say to yourself, well, they say it's better than gold and it's this, it's that, and it's the other. Then why do you have an image of a gold coin as your Bitcoin? I don't understand it. So it's those types of things that ultimately lead me to the conclusion that look, as I said, and as I highlighted in the piece, I'm probably old school investment style, a bit like Peter Lynch, that says, you know, I need to know what I own and I need to know why I own it. And, you know, owning something because I think there's a bigger fool out there that's going to buy it off me at a higher price, you know, it's fine, but it's last time I checked, it's verging on a Ponzi scheme or something like that, you know, and that's kind of where we are.
Do you know the difference between a Bitcoin and a Dogecoin or any of the other ones?
Not a clue. And I actually was only surprised me there with all the volatility in the last couple of weeks. I happened to be flicking through Twitter one evening and I saw the list of all cryptocurrencies that are out there, right? And you're just kind of going, oh my God, like there's pages of them. And I'm kind of going, are any of these fungible? You know, what's the exchange rate between a Bitcoin or a Ethereum or whatever it's called, you know?
What? Make sure that we use no jargon when you say fungible.
As in, you know, a euro printed, a euro 50 euro note printed under the French government is the same as the 50 euro note that's printed by the Irish government, that is printed by the German government. It's 50 euro. It's 50 euro. It's 50 euro. And that's ultimately what I mean. The other thing I think that, and again, coming back to that idea of the digital register and blockchain and things like that. The other thing that would make me very worried is, and probably what's caused a bit of the volatility we've seen recently, is you still have the three major central banks in the world, the Federal Reserve in the US, the European Central Bank, and now the Chinese Central Bank, the People's Bank of China, all coming out and not giving the head hat tip to any of these currencies. The reality is, at some point, they will make, the three central banks could either make their own digital currency and have a Fed coin, it's a big coin, and a China coin if they wanted it, or they might decide that let's have one in its entirety across all of the three major central banks. You have that and then Bitcoin is gone. There's no need for all of these digital currencies because you suddenly have something that is backed by global central banks, easily transferable, can be stored anywhere, all of these good things, and ultimately can't be impacted by government. So that's your real digital money.
That said, the American version of Davy, Goldman Sachs and others are investing and they have vehicles for cryptocurrencies.
You're absolutely right. When have you've long worked long enough in this business? When have you ever seen an investment bank turn down an opportunity to make money? Right?
Do you reckon that's as simple as that?
It's as simple as that. It's absolutely as simple as that. And you look at it and you say, well, why are they doing that? Because there is a commission to be made in trading. And you know what? If you're getting charged 8% by wherever, and they charge 7%. you'll go to them and they're still making 7% on a hell of an awful lot of transactions. You know, and when you think of the commissions they're making on share trading or bond trading or any of these other things now, they ain't making those types of numbers. I can guarantee you that, you know. So there's always going to be somebody who wants to make money if they can see making money out of it.
Drug dealers and IT hackers love bitcoins or cryptocurrencies. When do you think will government, international government, shut it all down?
I think that's the next big risk, because you look at the whole area of money laundering and you look, you know, like if you think about how difficult it is nowadays to open a bank account or anything else like that, right? And yet, you know, they're worried about, and this is because they're worried about terrorist financing and money laundering, things like that. And yet, on the flip side of it, you've got this thing going on that basically can be exchanged willy-nilly. The one thing I always wonder about is, you know, so if people go in and they trade cryptocurrencies and things like that, how many of them actually take their money out of it, or are they just rolling the trade all the time, rolling the trade on, rolling the trade? And you and I have both been around long enough to see how bull markets end and can end very, very nastily, right? And you ultimately, again, the other thing too is I would say to you is you want to make sure that if you are in that type of a situation, who's holding your bitcoins? Because you're not holding your bitcoins.
But does anybody know?
No. Whereas if I buy some shares in a company, right, I've got a custodian, be it a Northern Trust or a bank in New York or any of these big, I know exactly where my investment assets are held, you know.
There's a further twist to it as well. When you go to buy a Bitcoin or whatever, you have to pass over, I presume, old-fashioned dollars or old-fashioned euro.
Yeah.
Somebody is having a laugh.
Yeah. And look, you know what? It can go, you know, and the old idea is that the world can stay irrational longer than you can stay solvent. It can be that way. We could be talking about this in another year, 2 years' time. But it will ultimately end. And you know, if you're playing this game, so long as you know that that's the game you're playing, well, knock yourself out. But, you know, I wouldn't fancy making, you know, long-term investments based on the hope that there's somebody out there going to buy something that you don't really quite know what it is off you at some point in the future at some price that's higher than what you bought it off the last person who sold it to you, and so on and so forth.
And there's no transparency. So you have no idea where the money has gone to or where it's coming from.
At least with the US dollar, when if you turn over the back of the dollar, they have the big frame sign that says "In God We Trust." You're buying Bitcoin. I don't know who you're trusting, but it ain't God.
Aidan, you're not a fan.
I'm not a fan, as I said, because I don't understand it, and I don't see it as an investment. I see it as you know, punting, trading, gambling, whatever you want to do. And you know, as I said in the piece, 2 10 at Chepstow, and pick the colour of the silks.
And as I famously used to say, the value of your investments can plummet as well as drop.
Yes, and as a wise man once said to me, he said, always remember that something that has fallen 95% can still fall another 95%. So that's the thing to bear in mind.
Aidan, it has been a pleasure to have you back on That Great Business Show. Or when I say back, to be back talking to you like this, because you always amuse me. That is Aidan Donnelly of Davy. Thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Subscribe today to That Great Business Show on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple and Spotify.
Do you know what happens to all of those empty shaving foam cans? In Ireland, 20 million of them are sent to landfill every year because they're officially hazardous waste. This landfill pollution is completely unnecessary. One bottle of De Facto shaving oil is the same as 10 cans of shaving foam. So switching from foam to the world's best shaving oil is the simplest thing you could do to help keep our planet clean. DeFactoShave.com, saving the planet one shave at a time.
Conobio, at That Great Business Show.
Now, we ask the big business questions on That Great Business Show, like, what'll we be wearing when lockdown is forgotten and we're back to business in person, in meetings, and at business events? Will we dress for the roaring 20s? Or should we keep a good grip on our trainers? at Team GBS HQ, we agreed that only one woman would have the answer, and that woman is the doyenne of Irish fashion, Belfast woman Helen McAlinden, who has been in business under her own name for 2 decades, as well as collaborating with other great Irish businesses, including Foxford Woolen Mills in Mayo and Finline Furniture in Laois. Helen McAlinden, you are very welcome to That Great Business Show.
My pleasure to be here, and thank you very much for inviting me.
We only invited you because of that lovely voice.
You're the only person who thinks my Belfast whinge is nice.
No, because Alison, our sound up, thinks it's lovely as well. So there you go. So that's two. We've doubled up.
I've got two.
You have been in business, in the fashion business, for a while. So you know absolutely everything. Answer the question, what is it looking like post July 19 or whenever the hell we're allowed to go out and enjoy ourselves again?
Well, I think it's looking pretty optimistic because I think people do want to get out. I think they have some money to spend. And I, for one, am hoping to entice them to spend some on HMACA.
You better tell people where they can buy your gorgeous clothes.
We will be delighted to welcome people into my own boutique in South William Street if they can fight the milieu of crowds getting in
there.
We'll
get on to that in a second because I do want to talk to you. You're pretty vexed about that.
Yeah, a little annoyed about that.
And where else can they find
you? And also, we have a very good department in Arnott's in Henry Street. So we'd be, and of course, online.
And we have a lovely relationship with Arnott's because we had them in for their Pitch 21 event, and they were telling me that they get 6 million shoppers a year, 1 million of them at Christmas.
Well, Arnott's are a fantastic outfit. They've been around for a while, and now, of course, they're part of the whole Arnott's, Brown Thomas's, Selfridges group. But we trade very well in Arnott's. We love the fact that they don't only carry my line, but also a lot of other Irish designers, some young Irish design. But also, I think they just have a generally really eclectic and very wide fashion offer. So it's a great store. I shop there for clothes, for cosmetics and for furniture.
So what have you been doing since lockdown?
Strangely, I've been busy.
Explain.
I've been trying to design for seasons that I'm not sure are ever going to happen. We went into lockdown, as we all remember, in March last year. We had just launched Spring 20, that lost and forgotten season. So immediately we had to sort of try and rejig our offer, think, oh, what can we do with all this stock? What are we going to do for winter? At that stage, we'd already committed to winter, so we had to anticipate. Of course, then we thought we would be out of lockdown by July, September 20. No. So we had to try and pull and hold some stock, redesign, change, pivot, that wonderful word that everybody's using, pivot our business, start putting in leggings and athleisure, change our kind of occasion wear to a more casual offer. Then we had the challenge of trying to source fabrics, which is the sort of major fulcrum of whether our collections are good enough, is by our choices in fabric. And normally that's about going to meet your suppliers, going to trade fairs, touching and feeling the fabrics. So we had to do all our fabric sourcing on Zoom, and that was a challenge. So it's been, and then, of course, the main thing we had to do was really work on our online business, like everybody else.
How far ahead are you planning? For example, now, are you thinking into next winter, as in 6 months' time, or 9 months' time? Because at some stage...
Winter is made.
Is it really? Can you sell last winter's winter clothes?
Not really.
Why not?
Well, we were able to hold some fabrics which we had committed to for winter of last season. We didn't make, and some of those fabrics will, because we're sustainable, we don't burn clothes. Where we can redeploy, we will redeploy. But right now, winter is in production. So our bit, the design bit, is done. Our factory, our manufacturers, mainly in Portugal, have made a great deal of the stock. And I am, with my design team, working on next spring. But, you know, COVID should have told us we can't plan. We are working on the fact that we are going to have a pandemic-free spring.
As I was preparing my I don't normally think about what, oddly enough, I do think about what I'm going to ask people. And I was wondering, where does fashion come from? What determines, for example, the roaring 20s that people are anticipating might mean big flouncy dresses? Who determines where fashion, and it is worldwide, where it comes from or goes?
I'm not an anthropologist. If I was, perhaps I could answer that question more accurately. I think fashion comes from the top down and the bottom up, from the street up and from trends and what the major couture houses are doing. And perhaps that's happening less. And now, of course, it's, you know, social media. We all know what's happening everywhere and we know exactly when it's happening. But I don't think anything, algorithms are important, but, you know, I think sometimes it has to be about something more than that, a feeling, which I don't know how you pick that feeling up. It's about listening to music, looking at movies. Something in the air.
That is what I want to get to. Because I'm just wondering, as I came here, I said, like, who determines length of skirt, width of trousers, colours, oranges or blues, whatever is the fashion?
I mean, there is a huge industry of forecasters who work in fashion forecasting. Textile companies get forecasts of what the colour trends are going to be. Paint forecasters, everybody. But I don't know that really... Do we use forecasters? Never.
But you're looking at everything online, magazines...
Everything. Yeah. Social media, online. And, you know, celebrities influence fashion. If, you know, somebody wears something who is really in the public eye all the time, it has an effect. Last year, I might have said, or 2 years ago, I might have said, what Meghan Markle wears is important. I don't think we're going to be too influenced by that anymore.
Who's your big influence?
My influence has changed. I don't know who I really look. I would look at very interesting brands who you may or may not know. There is, for instance, a really interesting and directional brand in America called The Row, which is owned by the Olsen sisters, who were, you know, in the media. And I think it is fairly directional. And I just think you have to take a very wide view. And it's also about what's happening in society. I mean, we are all wearing our trainers. I have got out of leggings and a tracksuit for the first time this week in 6 months. But I think there is an appetite now to dress up. But I think how we're going to dress up will be a little different.
Go on, explain. What are you thinking? What's your big thought?
I think everybody has got used to wearing very comfortable clothes. I won't say that we only dress from the top up because of Zoom, but I do think that comfort has become important. But I think this will be balanced by the need to dress up, but we might dress and still wear our trainers. So don't throw out the trainers anytime yet.
But the Roaring Twenties is going to be a phenomenon, you say?
Well, I think after, you know, the terrible pandemic of the Spanish flu and the First World War, people felt the need to party. And I think that will happen over the next few years. But it is really interesting if you really examine the Roaring Twenties, because actually it was about a total change in style and fashion. And pre-20s, women were wearing very constraining and constricting clothes. In the 20s, although it was glamorous, dresses were shifts, straight, waistless. Women stopped wearing corsets. So that in its way was a new freedom. And I think this time we're going to want to dress up, but I think there will be a new freedom. I think things that used to be considered really frumpy, like a little bit of elastic on a waist, very cool people are now saying, actually, that's comfortable. I also think that we're into sustainability. And we have to be very careful, not only with our manufacturing choices, but with our fabric choices. People don't want polyester or anything oil-based. They want cottons and linen and sustainable fabric. So I think there's going to be a big move in that direction. And I also think while we want to be glamorous and be ready for parties, we want clothes that function.
You are, as well as being a designer, a retailer.
Yeah.
And you have a retail unit on South William Street, the epicenter of the start of the party season Dublin.
We have started.
Explain what it's been like to try to do business in South William Street with hundreds, if not thousands, of people outside your front door, all drinking their little heads off.
None of them trying to buy clothes.
Well, that's a bad start.
I think last weekend, you know, I don't want to be one of the people who moan about people out enjoying themselves. I think we all need to get out. But I think we do need public spaces to get out into. And I think one of the things that's been very difficult and which annoyed retailers like myself in South William Street, we have had a terrible 15 months. We've been closed, we've been opened, we've been closed, but generally we've been closed. And we've all made an effort to redo our shop fronts, make everything look nice, plant a few flowers and clean the place up. And suddenly we come in on Monday morning and we couldn't trade properly at the weekend. And these crowds of partygoers and mainly kids are threatening to, I mean, you don't want to walk up the street with 20 people drinking, partying and doing other things. And you don't, that's not the kind of environment that's going to encourage people into town. So I think Dublin City Council need to think very carefully. Everybody's talking about, you know, government support, and the government support has been very good. But, you know, I think it's really important for Dublin as a city that we encourage our retail sector and we make the city a people-friendly place. And that means we encourage people into shop, not just a party. I think I can't blame. Everybody wants to go out. The weather's nice. But there's a way to do it. And that's about carefully thinking about pedestrianisation, not just taking sudden steps. And I don't think the pedestrianisation in town is working. I think it's discouraging shoppers.
That's interesting.
I think there's a different way to do it.
You're thinking there, because I haven't heard that one before.
Well, in South William Street, for instance, they've sort of extended pavement so as some of the restaurants can put out tables. They've narrowed the street and they've now made it one way apart from people coming out of Brian Thomas's car park. So it's neither one thing nor the other. And it has been very disruptive. If people do want to shop and bring cars in, they just don't know how to do it. Now, I think if they had have just made the pavements really wide and left it open for one lane of traffic, it would have both made the streetscape look better and make it easier for retailers to have their customers in.
There has obviously been a massive shift, promoted a good deal by the pandemic as well, to online. You mentioned it yourself earlier. Would you consider shutting the shop and just going wholly online?
I think online and bricks and mortar feed off one another. Now, our online business has expanded hugely, but that's expanding from a very small base pre-pandemic. So for us, it forced us to look at online, and we've done it, and we're really pleased we've done it. It's a whole different skill set. But it is a different way to satisfy your consumer. And I buy a lot of stuff online myself. I probably buy less clothing than I do other items. But I think online is here to stay. I do, however, I think it will change retail. I don't think you need vast retail spaces. I think people need to come in and touch and see. And they might go back and buy online. So I think it's going to change the retail landscape. But I do think people still want the experience of going into a shop, feeling and trying on. It's also, I think people will shop in both ways.
I'm also interested in your brand because you've been clever to use, to try to expand the Helen McLinden brand. I mentioned Foxford Woolen Mills and I've mentioned Finland Furniture and Leash, is that you are associated with both. Is that a conscious decision?
Sometimes I get bored with clothes.
Is it that simple?
Sometimes it is that simple. And, you know, I like design. I think design in corporate is the sort of a pretty all-encompassing. I think good design is good design. And, you know, interior lifestyle, yes, that all really interests me.
So is that the future for Helen McLinden?
I think clothes aren't finished yet.
I'm trying to see where you're going to go now and say.
Well,
the next
I think there is a real thing about lifestyle, and I think that incorporates how we live, how we eat, how we dress, and how we furnish our homes. And I'm interested in all those things.
Helen, have you got something up your sleeve that I'm not aware of?
I'm not telling you anything now.
I know you're not telling me. That's why I'm asking. But I can see what the listeners cannot see is there's a wry smile on your face. I have an idea that you have something.
It's just
planned.
A very nice sunny day.
Okay, last question. You have been warned. Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Well, I had to think very carefully about that because I have made some pretty good decisions in hiring people, and I have a fantastic team, both in the girls who work on the shop floor in retail and my design and office team. We're a small but close-knit team. I've also made a few bad mistakes. Who would I hire? I think now we need a disruptor. So I thought at first of celebrities, fashion influencers, and then I came up with somebody completely different. And I've read a lot recently about Liam Casey, who I used to know when he worked years ago for Trico Marine and in Grafton Street. And Liam has recently done things, been involved with Irish companies like Jim and Coffee, which is a sportswear company. And I think if I was going to hire someone now, I need somebody to bring in a completely different set of skills than I have myself. So I would look at a business entrepreneur like Liam, who has lots of international access. And I think that's a kind of disruptive and visionary thing that we need. Sometimes I think fashion can be too insular and just looks within itself. So I would look at someone like Liam.
That's a very interesting call because that sounds to me like, you know, who is going to partner you in this massive expansion that you're going to go through.
No, please don't jump to any conclusions like that.
Helen McLinden, as always, it's a real pleasure to chat to you and continued success. And I hope they do clean up South William Street for
you. I really hope so. And it's been a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much, Colm.
You're listening to That Great Business Show. ThatGreatBusinessShow.com.
Do the right thing. Ditch dirty, polluting, non-recyclable shaving foam. Switch to DeFactoShave.com. The only shaving product you need. One nail varnish-sized bottle lasts a year. Great for your skin, your pocket, and your planet.
Backing great women-led businesses on every show.
My next guest has been to the fore of the travel industry for over 20 years. And last year, in the middle of the pandemic, when we didn't know what was going to become of us all, the opportunity arose to take over the Irish Travel Trade Network. That includes a great daily newsletter email that I signed up to without knowing anything about who was behind it. That in itself seemed to be a great reason to have a chat with the relatively new MD at IITN, Sharon Jordan. Welcome to That Great Business Show, Sharon.
Well, thank you for having me.
Here's the pun. I did warn her. You could have had a shoo-in into the family business.
I could have.
Explain.
Explain. Okay. So my dad and my mum had a shoe business in Dublin back
shoe
in
shops.
The day. Shoe shops. I can't even say the words now. A lot of alliteration going on there. But yeah, I think it was the early 80s. My dad was made redundant and, you know, as most people were back in the 80s. And he started working the markets. And bit by bit, he started to see that shoes seemed to be the thing that sold quite a lot. And so step by step, he opened up a couple of shoe shops.
I saw what you did there. Step by step, shoes.
It's in the blood.
So people will, in Dublin, will recognise the Jordan shoe shop name.
Yeah, they would. Yeah, of course they would. So there was Blanchardstown, there was the ILAC Centre, there was the Square in Tala. They were kind of in the M50 shops, I would say. I'm very privileged to get into those locations because for an Irish man getting into these big UK companies, as they would have been at the time, UK-owned companies at the time, it was quite an achievement for him. But I never actually worked in the shops.
You turned your heel on
it. I did turn my heel on it. And ironically, my sister, my brother worked for him, but it was just never for me. I just didn't want to work for my dad. And that was just the bottom line.
We won't go there because he will, I hope, listen to this.
Yeah.
So you actually decided to go into the travel industry.
I did.
And you have worked right across, up and down and down and out.
Yeah, absolutely. So I talked myself into my first job in the travel industry. Absolutely walked into a company and I walked in every week looking for a job, basically. I was in college at the time and it was the first degree in tourism that existed in Ireland. And I was due to go into college to do law and German. And at the last minute, I just changed this. And it was the best decision of my life because I haven't looked back and I've got to see the entire world for free on a daily basis. And I mean, who wouldn't want that as a lifelong dream job?
Okay, but was that a hankering from a young age? Or?
Oh, yeah. I was very lucky. I remember the first time we got brought overseas, it was to Disney World in Orlando, no less.
You know? Yeah.
Spoiled rotten, you know. Up until that point, it was Wexford in the camper van, but all of a sudden we're in Disney World in Orlando. And it was so surreal because when we came back, we were the first people in school that had ever been to that side of the world. So they actually made me stand up in assembly and tell the story of Disney World. And I think that's just where my passion grew from. And I just loved telling people about holidays and everything you can do.
I'm surprised you weren't killed by them all with envy. Eyes boring into the back of your head.
To be honest, I don't think people actually believed us. You know, it was like so, you know, for where I went to school and, you know, the life that we had, it was completely surreal to go to somewhere like that.
So from there,
yeah,
we'll skip along.
Yes.
And you, well, name some of the places that you've both worked with and for and places that you've been.
Okay, so I worked for a company. I started for a company called Panorama Holidays.
I remember them.
And then they amalgamated with a company called Air Tours, and then they became My Travel. And then I moved on to a beautiful company called Sunway Holidays, which is one of the biggest tour operators in Ireland at the moment. They're still in existence. I worked for them for nearly a decade. Went to Top Flight, a great ski company. Loved it there. And where did I go for there? And then I went back to Sunway, actually. I went back to Sunway for a little while. And then eventually, I got headhunted to join a company called the Travel Corporation. And they are the biggest family-owned travel company in the world. And I was hired as country manager for them.
That's a big job.
It was a big job. Yeah, absolutely.
And explain a little bit more about that family, because I've seen the name, but I know little enough about them. They are wealthy.
That's a word. They're the Tolman family, the South African family. Absolutely beautiful people. Strong protectiveness of the travel industry. I mean, they're big into sustainability. They own some of the top companies in the world, one of them being the Red Carnation Hotels, which is part of Ashford Castle. And the new one in Dublin that's going to open in 2022 on Hatch Street. They bought the Jesuit building there. That's going to be a lovely 5-star. Wonderful family. I mean, I absolutely adored working for them.
And am I right, they own a train? Or the train, do they?
They own River Cruises. Is it the cruises you're thinking
of? I thought that they have... Do they have a train service around Ireland? Exceptionally luxurious.
That's Belmont. That's a different company. Oh, okay. But Belmont stops in Ashford Castle. Yeah, so there would be a big connection there.
You're just trying to dig me out of it. I made a mistake. So there you are in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah.
And something pops up into your view.
Yeah. Now, you've got to remember, I was on maternity leave as well. So I had literally just had a little baby and a lockdown baby, as they're called these days. But I just got this whole vision of what I wanted to do in the future. Did I want to go back into the big, bad corporate world? And after the pandemic, rebuilding the travel industry is going to really be rebuilding from the very, very bottom.
Do you think? I mean, we'll get onto that in a second. Yeah,
100%. And this opportunity presented itself to me and I grabbed it with both arms. And while some people say I'm very brave. I think I might have been a little bit stupid and a little bit brave mixed together in a big pot. But, you know, I haven't looked back and I'm just, you know, living every day and enjoying every day as much as I can.
And you better explain what the business is.
Okay. So it's the Irish Travel Trade Network. So it was in existence about 50 years before I bought it. And what it does is it has the National Travel Awards. So we have an award ceremony every year, but it also is a daily I suppose, website and newsletter.
That's the one I get.
That's the one you get, absolutely.
Because I'm eternally just curious as to what's going on. And I look at that for ideas for the podcast as well.
Well, you know,
it's very good.
It is very good. And I'm very fortunate to have some really good writers and journalists that have joined the team since I took it over. And I've just, you know, really locked down the growth pattern I want to have with it. In terms of when I bought it, it was a magazine. But the future of printed paper is not in magazines, it's online platforms. I know a lot of your listeners might disagree with that, but that's my personal opinion.
I think it is the future online, yeah.
The writing's on the wall there, I think. So
what are you going to do with the publication? What's your kind of big ambition?
So when I started, I was kind of very nervous. Obviously, we're looking at least another year before we come out of this. So I start looking at what's going on in the market in Ireland. And it really is the word staycation repeatedly came up. And so eventually I said, right, we'll start writing about Ireland on the site, but instead of just overseas holidays and trips abroad and all the kind of news that's in the world of airlines and cruises and everything that's going on. But what I saw what was happening was when we wrote about Ireland, we lost readers and we lost people unsubscribed.
That's one of the things about digital.
Yeah.
You can actually see it happen almost on an hourly basis.
Exactly. Yeah. So I started to get really worried then. I was like, oh God, I've really taken a punt on this little business. So what I started to think about doing was, you know, I'll put a tab up on the top with just Ireland content. And then I started thinking, I was like, do you know what, actually, I'm going to just launch an Ireland ITTN site. So I did. So I developed a site and we now have a whole separate site called ITTN Ireland.
Maybe that's the one I'm on. I can't remember now.
Well, ITTN is all overseas stuff. So that'd be about like Emirates and, you know, all the airlines, Aer Lingus, everything like that. And then ITTN Ireland is purely just about Ireland. And I was very lucky to have Joan Scales join the team. Joan Scales, a writer from
Ex-Irish Times.
Yes, yep. Ex-Irish Times. So she's now editing that for me. So it's wonderful. And then I have Fionn Davenport editing the outbound site. So I'm
News Talk.
Ex-News Talk. So we've got some really key people that are so experienced in the industry talking and really informing people about what's going on. If you want to know what's going on, this is the place to go.
And I presume a general reader should be looking at it because, what's going down, what's happening. In fact, I had something yesterday. Somebody was asking me about where will I find the great deals for Ireland.
Yeah.
Will I find them on ittn.ie?
So you'd find them on ittnireland.ie.
Okay.
So, and that's in there. So what we do is every day we put up a new special offer that has availability because that's the important thing at the moment. And there's just no rooms in hotels this summer. So
now, let's get into the business because you just said to me it's going to be from the bottom up or from the ground up.
Yeah.
And then in the next paragraph, you're telling me that they're booked out.
See, they're booked out at high season. I was very fortunate to stay in the Intercontinental Hotel last night on their opening night of reopening since Christmas. And I'd say there was 10 people in the entire hotel. But yet this Friday, they were telling me they had 200. Right. So, you know, bank holiday weekend, of course you're going to have 200 and you're going to be at close to capacity. But every other day of the week is going to be a hard, hard sell. I was talking to someone the other day, a hotel group, and they were saying they're at 17% capacity.
17.
17. I mean,
and
that
that's
is
at the moment into the future. Like, not just
if they're booked for the next few months. Dublin hotels in particular are going to suffer because, you know, you only take city breaks in Dublin. They tend to be at weekends, you know. You're not going to really have a family of four dragging the kids up to Dublin for a week in the city. Now, you might.
Are you
but,
sure?
You know, I think I'd be heading to East Cork or West Cork, I should say, or down to, you know, somewhere along the coast.
You will, but then West Cork comes to Dublin.
West Cork don't leave West Cork, you silly.
That's absolutely true. It's so beautiful.
It's so beautiful. Why would you? Yeah, exactly.
So how can the industry do? How can it dig itself out of this big, big, big hole?
Yeah, it's a big, big hole. I think the only way we're going to do it is by getting back travelling, whether that's overseas or in Ireland. I mean, we're just going to have to get bums back on seats in the planes and people back in beds.
We'll talk about Ireland first of all.
Yeah, okay.
Like, if the deals are there, people respond instantly to deals and they'll take a day off work, 2 days off work. They'll have, you know, romantic 2 days off down in Dublin or in the Intercontinental or down in West Cork and Dunmore House in Clonakilty somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere like that. But and that's fine for June, July and August.
No, no. In the middle of November, why not?
It's not going to. You're never going to get the Irish market filling beds at that level, the required level. Post-COVID, or you just, Ireland has never staycation. We are not a nation. We go abroad. The odd few of us would go for a little romantic weekends away, but you're never going to have the population of Ireland filling the beds in the off-season in hotels. That's just, it's just not going to happen. It doesn't matter if you're given beds away for 59 euros. You're still not going to be able to fill them. We need the international market back.
Okay, so if the international market does come back, there is now the other problem, and I'm not sure which comes first, absence of employees, workers.
Yeah, we did a big report on this 2 weeks ago, actually. Joan did a fabulous piece on it. It's a huge issue. It's a huge issue for our industry. It's a huge issue for a lot of industries, but particularly for the hospitality industry, because one, we've lost a lot of people that were fortunate enough to get the PUP, but they've gone back to their own countries, or they have decided that they don't want to come back work 5 days a week. But it's going to be it's a crisis coming down the line, absolutely 100%. And everybody's aware of it. So everyone's trying to hold on to what they have. But I mean, even in the Intercontinental this morning, three of the people that I would have known from before were saying that they were leaving, they were moving on, whether it was they were being given a new promotion in one of their other hotels like Paris Court or something. So it's a huge problem. Staff shortage is going to be a huge problem for the hospitality industry.
Solve it for me.
We need to get people working again. We need to.
Which is fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
But let us assume that by September, the pub is gone or going.
Down 50 euros in September.
Is that not enough?
A lot of people are earning a lot of money on the pub versus what they're doing in certain roles. You know, that's an issue that needs to be addressed.
Well, that's an industry issue, isn't it?
It's an industry issue. Absolutely. It's an industry issue. I think personally, we need to have a lot more training situations where we're bringing in people from abroad to learn hospitality in Ireland, to bring them in and train them up. I think that's one way of doing it. I think we need to be really cultivating students. I mean, if you think that a lot of students haven't probably worked in the last year and a half, there's been no workplace placements, which you couldn't because of COVID. You have no internships, nothing like that has taken place.
If you listen back to one of the other podcasts about COVID interns, great, we've used them. It works. I will give another shout out to them. COVID interns works. Use them. Check them out on the
podcast. I'm going to do that because I'm desperately looking for two interns at the moment. One in the journalism world and another one in the social media world. So if you're out there, contact me.
As I say, the podcast company, has hired one. She is brilliant. Alana. Unfortunately, she's got a very good job and so she's leaving us. Oh. But anyway, that's a good news story. Back to this idea of training people in Ireland.
Yeah.
Haven't the Swiss got a kind of a stranglehold on that?
They do, yeah.
How could we wrest that away from them?
Incentivizing them with the opportunity, like with the possibility of an actual proper job at the end of it. I mean, you don't want to just bring in people and put them in the menial jobs, not to use that word, but you need to give them a proper line of work and like a future. It's all about future.
But if I go and train in Switzerland, I've kind of effectively got a visa or a passport to bring me anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
You are Swiss trained. You can go to any hotel in the world.
Very hard to get in there, though. You know, you have to.
I have no experience.
I mean, that's the creme de la creme. And I mentioned Red Carnation Hotels earlier on. I know if you work for them or go into their training program, you can. It's pretty much like a passport to the world. I mean, really, really good hotels train really, really well. We're talking big numbers here. Switzerland have a couple of small colleges that would bring people in and train them up and train them in the hotels. But it's an endless conversation. There is no real answer to it because at the end of the day, we just need people working in places in order to service at the level we need to service at, because that Cade Mead of Falta has to be the green flag that we're waving out across the world in the next few months and years, because we have given a very clear message, in my opinion, to the world that we're closed. You know, the rest of the world thinks we're closed. On our ITTN Ireland website or newsletter and website, we went from 2,000 followers to 29,000 followers within 1 week because the American market started signing up to it. So we now have 27,000 American travel agents signed up to our website and our newsletter that goes out every week. And they are hungry to get back to Ireland, but they are sending me emails all the time saying, when are you open? What are the restrictions? When can I get there? And this vision of Ireland is that we are closed. There's no flights coming in. We don't have the airlift. And this whole doom and gloom, Ireland is, you know, too many restrictions. You can't walk down the street over there. I mean, that's the vision of Ireland out there at the moment.
There's a job to be done there.
A little bit of Fault Ireland have a big job ahead of them. They really do. And Tourism Ireland, they have a
you know everything. I thought, well, that's a noose. Everything about the travel industry. I love knowing little tips and hints about where are the deals at the moment, here or abroad. So I'd love to send our podcast listeners off to say, oh God, I heard that brilliant idea on That Great Business Show.
Okay, so God, you've thrown that one at me. So at the moment, here's a tip. Don't go to Portugal. And the reason I say that, I shouldn't say that because I love Portugal. It's one of my favourite places to go. But, you know, it's the only country from England that's on the green list. So it's the only country that English people can actually travel to as vaccinated people. So the rest of Europe is open. Spain is open to Irish people from the 19th of July. We can go anywhere, Malta, Spain, we can go Greece, Germany, everywhere. But English can only go to Portugal, which means the prices are high. So because they've booked out all the villas, they've booked out all the hotels. So that's a tip, don't go. Okay. I shouldn't say that. Portuguese tourist board will be on to me tomorrow, killing me because they're good friends
we
and I love them.
Portugal.
Absolutely.
I'd be down there in a heartbeat if I could.
Oh my goodness, I'd love to have a little stay down there in August. Yeah. But I know that's where the prices are going to really go.
Okay, that's a good hint. Okay, anything else?
Deals-wise, I think deals, you're probably going to be looking at the likes of Greece because they have a lot of beds that need to be filled. I don't think mainland Europe, for example, France and Italy will struggle with hotel bed because people will drive through Europe and go and stay in them. I think places like the Greek islands, Croatia, that kind of thing, you're going to find deals this summer. And I would encourage everybody to get abroad and not just stay in Ireland. I mean, from the 19th of July, it's game on, people, you know. I'm just like, get out and see the world. How many times did we sit at home in the last year and go, God, I wish I had gone there that time that I had that opportunity to go and I just said no.
Very fair point, that is. So we better give a shout out for Ireland as well. What a hint or a tip for an Ireland stay.
Well, as I said earlier, Dublin is going to have some really good, and you see it on our site, Dublin properties are really struggling. So if you can get to Dublin, I would say get to Dublin. But across the country, I mean, the beauty that's there. And if we get the weather, it's all about the weather.
I know.
It's all about, I mean, the last 2 days were just heaven, weren't they? I mean, it's just so beautiful. But I mean,
is it better in Ireland to phone reception and ask for a deal? Or to try to use the website, or what is the best way, do you reckon?
I would always say website. Always say website, because you're going to get the deals. You're going to get the 10% off, the 15% off.
Even if you rang up the front desk and said, listen, any chance of a half-price bed?
I think they'd laugh down. Well, first of all, they wouldn't be in a position to give you a half-price bed. You'd have to be sent on to reception or into sales, and they might be in a different country, or they might be closed. And the reality of it is a lot of people in Ireland and across the globe don't book between the usual 9 to 5 when these places are open. You know, we book when we're home from work, or we're sitting in front of the TV, or, you know, on the way to work, or, you know, just if we're out. So the traditional sales office open from 9 to 5 doesn't really lend to,
wanted to know that. Isn't that interesting? You've now answered my question. Final question. Hire in a heartbeat. Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Oh God, it'd have to be Willie Walsh.
You're the second person that
really?
We had, yeah. We had a former, Peter Jenkinson of Workit, was a former pilot who used to work with Willie Walsh. And he says he knew back then when he was starting off as a pilot that this guy's going to go places.
Wow.
And he would love to have him back again now. Oh, so why would you like Willie Walsh?
Well, I just think he's inspirational. I mean, from going from a pilot to being the head of Aer Lingus, the head of BA, the head of AIG, and now he's the head of IATA. I mean, and he's now trialling the IATA pass, which is going to allow us all to travel. You know, we'll all have these on our phone. I'm actually out in Dublin Airport tomorrow doing a walkthrough, and it'll be on our podcast or our platform tomorrow night. And it's basically going to be a walkthrough of how the airport's going to look when we travel on the 19th of July, and how security is going to be, and how we'll have to use these new IATA passes to get onto planes. And if you don't have them on your your phone, you won't get on the plane, you won't get through security. So I just think he's inspirational. I mean, I've been in his company, but never been brave enough to talk to him over the last number of years. But he just seems like a really nice, down-to-earth guy, but clearly very, very clever.
Once or twice, he's a very nice, and as you say, right down to earth.
Yeah, yeah.
Very successful. Oh. Top-class guy. Before you go, you're allowed to give one shout, well, no, two shout outs, Bishop. Better to give the international and the Ireland one. Where will anybody find your newsletter?
So you sign up to it on ittn.ie or ittnireland.ie, and you just go in, subscribe to it, and we send it out to you on a daily basis, and you will know everything that's going on within Ireland and across the world.
I wonder where I came across it that I did sign up to it. But anyway, I endorse what you're doing because I think it's really good. And looks good as well. It's very, very professional, very polished.
Yeah.
There must be a journalist in the family.
No, certainly not. Well, there is, but I can't talk about it.
Sharon Jordan, Managing Director, CEO,
or publisher, owner, whatever you like.
IITN.ie or IITN Ireland.
ITTNIreland.ie and ITTN.ie. Yes, that's
cool.
It. Thank you.
Sharon, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that's it from That Great Business Show on this, our 37th episode. As always, my thanks to the team here at Dublin South FM Podcast Studios. The awesome Alison O'Dwyer was on sound. The zings and stings are dropped in by Peter Rice later on, helping us make us officially the best-sounding podcast in the world. And a special Gurav Mahagat to Valerie O'Reilly of Unicorn PR for recommending Sharon Jordan to us. And remember, if you're a PR and want your clients to feature on That Great Business Show, just contact us on producer@thatgreatbusinessshow.com. And what's more, you don't even need to be a PR to do that. You'll find all you need to know about what we're looking for on our website when you click on the Share Your Story button. We're in business, so if you're in business, why not tell others about it by advertising on the only business podcast that does business differently. That's us. Please also do tell all of your friends about That Great Business Show. You wouldn't want them to miss out now, would you? And finally, my thanks to our sponsor, DeFactoShave.com, the world's best shaving oil. Try it for a week, and like me, you will be a forever convert. So from me, Conal O'Moran, until next week, Slán tamall.